Welcome again to, I think it's the fourth or maybe the fourth episode of the Raj Call podcast. I think so. I've lost count already because I don't do it as often as I'd like. But today I've got a very special guest again, who's actually become a very good friend of mine and a friend of my wife's, who's Sonia Panesar. So I'm gonna jump over to her and let her introduce herself first. Over to you, Sonia.
Hi, thanks, Raj, for having me on. This is amazing. So, guys and girls listening, everyone listening, I'm Sonia Panesar, and I am an independent singer, songwriter, born and bred in the UK, and been serving the so-called British Asian music industry for many, many years, whether it's through recording or through live entertainment as well. I think that's the brief version, Raj. What do you think?
So I pronounced your name the Gora way.
It's all right. Vanessa.
Yeah, Vanessa, yeah. So I need to get told off with a smack on my head. It's like when people call me Raj, like especially in Birmingham, it's Raj.
It's Raj. Oh yeah, of course. No, so it's Sonia Panesar. No, it's okay. I have got a tendency of saying it the right way because I'm a fanatic of my mother tongue, my Punjabi mother tongue, and I'm not saying nobody else isn't. It's just the way that I am. I've got this habit of saying it the right way.
So. Like my mom, she's born here, but she's her Punjabi. She teaches Punjabi and stuff. But even she calls me Raj sometimes. She's like, okay.
I don't know, maybe that's I'm London based. I always have this tendency that everyone up north pronounces things differently.
me and Ruby, my wife, always have this debate. Is it Bath or Bath?
So you would still be Raj in London, but I'm assuming up north you're Raj.
yeah, there you go.
Might be something to do with it, but yeah, I'm Sonia Panesar or Panesar, if you like to call it.
Panesar's better, actually. Authentic. Okay, so let's get straight into this. Tell me about how. I try not to make this small question. I just want a conversation to flow as it is, because you're a bubbly character in any way. You've got a great personality about you and a great charisma, which comes through. So it's sort of nice that when the conversation just flows automatically. So, but I'm gonna give you a little question. Just tell us about your background, because I know a bit about you, but not as much as I'd like to do. So it's an education experience for me as well. Tell me about your background in terms of how you got into singing.
Okay, so I'm gonna start at the very beginning. So at the age of four, my mum introduced me to music through Shabad Kirtan. She took me to Kirtan classes to learn how to play the vajra and to sing, and obviously learn the Shabad Kirtan that we do at the Gurdwaras. So I started there at the age of four. It might have been just before four, because I actually did my first Kirtan performance at four. So I've got a feeling it was a little bit before four. And I learned from Gyan Singh Surjeet, who was a blind gyani, actually. He's sadly passed away now, but he was a blind gyani, so I feel like I'm quite fortunate to have learned from someone who had a different sense of sound as well, actually, and that's a whole discussion in itself. But that was my first teacher. Sidelining that, along the way, I've had a female teacher as well, Darshan Kaur Sur, who was, as a young girl growing up, I was quite inspired by. She was the first auntie that I saw playing the tabla. And wow, she played it so well. But she also taught Kirtan classes, like after school classes at school halls and things like that. She taught tabla and vajra. So we had that sidelining as well. I'm talking about when I'm a bit older, sort of 8, 9 maybe. But Gyan Singh Surjeet, that teaching never left me. That was still there. We were still going to his classes. And so I had the teachings of both, and I'm sort of trying to think now, so from the learning aspect, from it was always Kirtan based. I didn't go out to learn songs or anything. It was always Kirtan based. So with the Kirtan, Gyan Singh Sujit's teachings, mainly, he had this whole organization where he taught Indian classical theory. He actually had a center alongside his Tabaji known as Hamdard. Now, he's very famous and well-known, definitely in London. I don't know in other areas, but... Hamdard, his name is. So people that are in the double T kind of clan, they will know that he was a renowned double T. So they had this center based in London where they taught Indian classical theory.
Could you also explain to the listeners what that means?
Which word or what? The word double G.
Yep.
Sorry, tabla player. Double G, okay, tabla yep. player.
So no one's going to know what that
means. No, of course. And please prompt me. Please prompt me. Exactly, and I'll try and do my best to explain because it's normal for me, but it might not be normal to others. So they had this centre or base in South or West London where we went. And we learned Kirtan. So Kirtan is your hymns, your Sikh religious hymns that we were learning that are all to do with faith. But the Indian classical theory was being taught sidelining that. So we actually sat, I say we, I'm talking about me and my brother, because my brother was always with me in these things. And my brother is 4 years younger than me. And we both attended I did the harmonium and the Kirtan, and he did the tabla. And we learned rags, the classical scales of Indian music, very heavily. We sat exams, we sat theoretical exams, practical exams, certificates. And these certificates were apparently, you know, like we have a GCSE exam, there was a real examining board that was assessing this stuff. A real examiner would come in and assess me or us in groups or on our own as individuals, and then we'd get issued a certificate. So it was a real serious thing that was going on. It wasn't just rocking up at a gurdwara learning how to sing this shabad and off you go. It was a real, real training and very disciplined as well. So Gyan Singh Sujit, when he was teaching me, I'd remember, I'm going to kind of mimic it if I can on camera. Imagine this is my knee. And if I go out of time, it was out of time. Or no, sing it again. You're off sur, off key. There were some serious, you know, kind of.
Those are the good old days, though, weren't they?
I didn't get hit otherwise, so there was no sort of real physical abuse. I wouldn't say it's real, but it was.
Of course, but it's the good old days that it meant so much to them.
Real discipline. Discipline was key. So I think because of that regimented discipline, that one-to-one sort of, you know, there was a room full of students learning at different paces, and we were all kind of waiting our turn to be called up. And it was quite traditional in the way that I learned. But that one-to-one valuable time, I can't knock that. And I'm very grateful that, you know, my mum took us there. So I've had that training. That's over the early years of my as a child growing up and absorbing music. That was some seriously heavy training that I had. And then I can't remember exactly what happened at what time, but I remember turning, sort of going to perform more Kirtan at gurdwaras, so temples. And then turning up to, like, there was a lot of, like, you'd have on a Monday, it'll be women that just did Kirtan on a Monday, for example. On a Friday, it was kids, and they'll have a whole event just for kids every Friday, and I'd start participating in those things, and it became quite regular, quite the norm. And the more I sang, the more I'd get asked to keep on turning up to gurdwara. Can you come on Sunday and sing another one? And it just became kind of, you know, the thing that we did, or the thing that I certainly did. Sidelining that, though, that's the learning aspect, and there's more to that story a little bit later. But so thinking from the age of four, that's going on. Whilst I was singing and performing Kirtan, at the age of seven or six, my mamaji, my mum's first cousin brother, maternal brother, had an event at his house, and he asked me to do Kirtan at his house because people get that done for blessings and so on. And I did one Shabad. And as a result of that, he asked me, okay, I'd like to book you in the studio. So who are we talking about? We're talking about Kuljit Bamra. Kuljit Bamra is my mum's first cousin. Yeah. So Kuljit Bamra is a renowned producer. He's been here in the UK serving British Asian music and mainstream music, theatre music. People might know him for being the producer behind Real Gaddi. There's so many classic legends he's worked with, and of course he's still serving the industry now. He's amazing what he's done. He's my mama G that heard me that day and said, right, I'm going to book you in the studio. And little girl me, 7-year-old, my mum was like, got me dressed up in like a nice colorful dress, off I go to the studio, taking her daughter to the studio. And I sang on, I recorded in my very high-pitched girly voice for an album called Ishq Ishq by Gormal back in the day. It was on a vinyl. And all I had to do was sing Ishq Ishq, Shabba Ishq Ishq right at the top of my voice.
You like the harmonies that all the chorus at the back?
Yeah, so wow. Those little girls, those screechy girls in the back that we've grown up listening to in Bhangra music. I did a lot of that voice work. Growing up, it started with Gormal's Ishq Ishq, and then with Kuljit Bumrah, he's just I'm gonna call him Mama G. Sorry, it's really weird for me to call him
Kuljit. Yeah, of course.
So with Mama G, he's like, okay, I've got another project, and so on. So basically, as a result of this, I started doing recording projects as a chorus singer for various projects. So I have now recorded, I think, 30, 40 albums chorus-wise. Wow. Through him and his
studio experience at a young age.
So I'm just trying to explain. So I know what you've asked me is, where did you start? How did it happen? There's actually two things. There's a learning aspect. Then there's a recording studio aspect. And I've worked with Hindi alternative artists, the Bhangra scene as well. And then, you know, back in the day, people were looking for, oh, does anyone know a female singer that can do this part? It meant that I started then working with the likes of Sukhshinder Shinda, Jazzy B, Kumar Hina.
I didn't know that.
People, yeah, but as a chorus singer in the background. So
that's
a lot
cool.
Of it,
it's massive. It's a massive.
Yeah, it is. It is. So I got the opportunity to work with all these people. I worked with Sheikh from Kiss Records as well, with some of his artists, Binder Munde back in the day, and there were so many. So I was going up and down to Kidderminster, to Pete Ware Studio. This is when I'm a bit older now. Planet Studios with Sukhshinder Shindaji was. And then in South, there was various studios. So I've had that going along whilst I was still learning only Kirtan. And then I can't remember what happened at what stage, but I had a change of teacher. And he was a very, very, also very disciplined classical teacher that nobody really knew about at that time. His brother was known, Maun Singh Musapuri is his brother's name. People knew him as a classical raggi again is down the whole Shabad Kirtan classical route. So, but his brother Jagjit Singh Dheeraj, who again has passed away sadly, I had a few years of some seriously solid training from him, where every little note had to be said, sung a certain way. I was doing riyaz 2 hours a day as a child, you know, after school, any time. And if I didn't do it, it was some serious pressure. Learning every sadgam, every scale, it was something else. It was like it could have been a separate life.
This is while you're in full-time education as well.
Yes, while I'm in full-time education, going to school like a normal child. So I feel quite fortunate that I had that going on. That gave me some serious foundation to my singing journey, sidelining with the recording studio experience, which was very fortunate. Jagjit Singh Dheeraj passed away when I was 16, and then I stopped learning. But what I did was I took a step back and I thought, right, what can I do with this now? And I think I just started to explore with all the knowledge that I had. Mm-hmm. And started thinking, okay, let me improvise, let me start composing, let me do this, let me do that. I actually worked in the radio media field for quite some time. I was a DJ for a short while, and I was working within radio stations. And I was DJing at clubs, and so I was kind of doing this whole other side of media. And then suddenly I found myself as a presenter on a community radio station with DJ Senator on my show physically in the studio.
Is this the senator who had a lot of albums back in the, I think,
the senator, yeah. The DJ senator was a featured senator, a featured DJ on my show as a presenter. And I just said, I feel like singing to what you're doing. And we did this live DJ versus my voice collaboration. And after the show, he said, you want to record something for my album?
Wow.
And I went, yeah, sure, why not? And then I debuted on Senator's album, No Way Out, back in the day. There was Nena and Kulli.
Oh, do you know Kulli? I was just about to say, I used to love that song. I didn't know you sang that.
Kulli is my debut, and so was Nena on there. Kendini
Nena. Wow.
Everyone knows.
Especially Kulli, that was a massive song, that was.
Yeah, so that was my debut.
Wow.
And then ever since, so after that came other projects as a lead vocalist, and I still do other projects for, you know, World Fusion and all this Hindi alternative. I think I've got this love for music in such a way. I'm still exploring. I'm always exploring. But I do miss that sort of regimented teaching, I think, because it's formed such a foundation. You know, then life happens, personal things happen. But my connection to music hasn't been lost. I think it was for a little while due to personal experiences, but I think it never really leaves you. So, so I've always had it in the background. So because my roots were from Kirtan, I found myself coming back to Kirtan. Whenever I feel a little bit lost with music, I don't know where I'm heading, I sit back down with the vajra or my digital tanpura box.
Yeah.
And I start kind of vibing and sort of kind of coming out with things that I remember and try and really home into the spirituality side of things. And then I break free again and start over. So, that's kind of the long version of the, you know, how my journey was. But I think along the way, what's happened is after Senator's album No Way Out meant that I was then performing live, either with him first. Actually, we went to lots of clubs and performed those tracks because they were hit tracks then, and then featured on other albums as well, did some covers, and I've kind of started my career, but never really stopped fully, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Life gets in the way, doesn't it, at times?
Yeah. So here we are.
Oh, that's really cool. Like, it's just to know that about you, especially the senator bit. It's something I didn't know, and I used to listen to that song heavily when I was younger.
Yeah, everyone knows what that is, and it's so lovely that people still remember those tracks. So
I remember the starting senator. That's my really bad impression.
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay, it's cool. So let's move on a bit. I'm going to come back to your singing bit later, but I know that you're a songwriter and composer as well. How did you get into composing and songwriting?
So I think composing came through the fact that I was surrounded with that recording studio environment. It meant that I saw projects, how they were being worked on, how a producer would kind of say, can you sing this for me that way, or how harmony were being laid, or I was hearing pieces of music as they were being worked on. And I think that was quite inspiring for me. And I think coupled with the experience of singing, coupled with the experience of media, I actually, at the age of 20, 21, was so passionate that I actually had a home studio of my own at that age. Wow. And I, before singing, more than singing, wanted to get into production.
Wow.
I only wanted to produce because I felt like when I hear things, so when I'm like, for example, I'll put the Hoover on, okay, and I'll hear the hum from the Hoover and I'll come up with something, and that will be it might be just be da na na na, something simple as that.
Yeah.
But I'll turn it into a phrase, a musical phrase, and then so on and so on. But because I was very passionate at that time, this creativity was unstoppable. So I wanted to keep on producing. I had Cubase back in the day, all set up on the PC, and I had a desk and everything. And it was, it was pretty decent. So I think I just found myself sitting in that space or at home with my keyboard, just constantly playing. In my spare time after school, when I woke up, I was sat by my keyboard, my Casio keyboard in my bedroom, or the studio setup that I had in a separate space. And I was just constantly playing. So I think because I could hear these melodies going on and on and on in my head, I used to think, okay, let me see if I can copy a Bollywood song. Let me see if I can cover this. Let me see if I can play the pieces. And I was very attracted to the pieces. For example, A.R. Rahman's Dal, the movie Dal.
Yep.
I was so fascinated by all those pieces. So I used to practice playing them and see, can I do it? And I felt like I could do it.
Wow.
So the confidence came. The songwriting, I think, came afterwards, where I would do a phrase of music and then I'll just think of one word and it will turn into the hook. It might just be, I'm just trying to think. For example, there is a song that I've actually done. So I remember composing music and all I heard was the word Babula, right? And I would just be doing da 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 Babula. And that then I would work on the phrase over and over again and see how does that fit
into
the music.
So I'm the same. I'm the same as you. Like, you know, because sometimes people say, who did you write this about? Was this your life experience or this? And I said, I just had an interview recently and I said, no, it just comes to you.
I'm very much like, I know there's writers out there. So I'm working with writers now who I can just say, can you write me a song about me going to the shop and buying a chocolate? And they will.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I'm one of those, it has to happen organically. I need to feel, I need to be in that space, and I will songwrite, but for me it's a certain headspace I need to be in to be able to have that happen to me. So I don't know if that's because I'm a singer or because I'm focusing on the melodies or the music pieces, I don't know. But if I was just a writer, I say someone who is just writing creatively all day, I think I'd be different. So I do songwrite, yes, but it's a time and space thing for me. So there's a Hindi song I wrote, Dil Ki Baatein, which a Hindi singer from the UK, Chirag Rao, sang, and the 515 crew band actually performed it and produced the song. I remember that one. I was just sitting in my conservatory one day and I was just going, na 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 na. Like I'm talking, da na 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 na, and I just turned it into the songs, and the words just kept flowing. And before you knew it, I think I stopped what I was doing and I just wrote. So it's, for me, I'm a very much it comes to me type of songwriter, or the music comes to me. I don't go looking for it, but it happens. I might be cooking and it will happen.
Yeah,
it's organic.
Yeah, I find that I get triggered by listening to music. So like you listen to music and think, oh, I've taken the melody somewhere else or taken it into a total different arena sort of thing. And then the song developed from there. Did you find a similar experience? Or
I would say yes. So I didn't know. So when I'm listening to Punjabi music, it doesn't happen. It happens.
It's not as melodious anymore. It used to be. It's very similar melodies. Recently.
There is something. It's interesting you've just said that. So I didn't know until I started listening to progressive house music a couple of years ago how effective that music was. I didn't know how effective that music was. Progressive house music is all about space and music. Very little voice elements. There are voice elements, but there's so much space. And I think for a singer or someone who wants to be creative, you need space.
Yeah.
So when I have this stuff playing on in the background, there's a journey musically evolving in their music, in that genre, and you end up singing something. And guaranteed, I've always got something coming out of that.
Yeah.
That's especially guaranteed creativity for me.
especially like you mentioned house, especially the crescendo part of it, it's really good. As you said, the space in between, and you just go in,
build up, the build up, the winding down, and then I think for me it's not when it's at its peak, so the build up is really important, or the winding down, the coming down track. For me, because I love my melody. So I think for me, it's like the rush happens and then da, 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 and I feel it. I feel the drop. I feel that it's happened in that moment, but I wouldn't know. I'm not like sort of, it's not, I wouldn't know. I'm not kind of inclined to be working at something when it's at its peak.
Yeah.
But then saying that, you know, if I hear Punjabi music and if I hear a really, really good Sikh dholki going on, I'm naturally singing something that's old, classic Punjabi folk because of what I've listened to growing up, your Surinder Kaur, Prakash Kaur type songs, and I'm singing those kind of classic numbers. It's just out of habit. But yeah, the songs come organically. I think that's the answer to your question, that the songwriting comes organically. But within that songwriting, once I find a phrase, I then look for patterns. So for example, the song that I've just released, as you know, is Hal Virabha. So Hal Virabha, remember the phrase Hal Virabha was like, you know, the opening of that song was, it was a feeling, it was a statement, it's a question. It's like, how do I obtain this love? It's a real serious statement. I need to grab someone with attention. And then another question, ya numanaman kime, and then halvirabha. It's like, oh, I'm telling a story. But again, listening to the syllables, are there enough syllables? I'm not overthinking in that initial state. When I'm first drafting, it's just me writing a story. Then I do second draft, and then I go back in and I think, right, do the syllables match? Does this even make sense grammatically? You know, Punjabi language in itself is so beautiful as a language that I want to make sure it actually makes sense what I'm saying. So yeah, there's a lot to look at on your second and third drafts and so on, but that initial draft is just thoughts and storytelling.
Do you write in English as well, just out of interest?
I have started to.
I really struggle. It's really strange. Like, I speak
more than Punjabi,
but I can write Punjabi, and I just wonder whether you're the same.
So I do struggle. I've started to, but I think it's because, again, I think it's the progressive music that got me to start, because they work with just a few lines, and it made it easier for me to kind of think, oh, I can do this. I can just say what I feel for two lines. And kind of work with and then build on it. So I would say I'm not your commercial English songwriter. I'm not. If it was alternative, if it was fusion, if it was house, I would say yes, I'm okay with that. But I think initially I found it really cringe, kind of, oh my God, is my writing even okay? Am I being too, is this too in your face? Or is it too, I don't know. There is poetry in English that maybe I need to find a new dictionary on how to kind of use those words and make it into a song.
I think I suffer from imposter syndrome when it comes to writing in English, because you're just not, okay, does this even make, like, does this sound cheesy? I just always think it sounds cheesy.
Yeah, I just think, and I think I'm such a romantic at heart as well, Raj. It's one of those things where, oh, I just want to write. I love writing about love. And I'm just like, all of my songs, there's always something to do with the theme of love. So when I put that in English, I just think, it's too cheesy.
Interestingly, me and my friend did this experiment Friday before that. We was in practice and we was practicing the song Tu Meri Zind, that song, right? Yeah. Practicing that, and when we looked up the lyrics, there was an English translation right beside it, right? And he goes, "Why don't you sing the try the English?" And we actually sang the English translation, but to a different melody. Obviously, it wasn't, because it wouldn't sit on the Indian melody. We sang it to an English melody, and it actually sounded all right. Like,
sounded all right.
We don't have to write songs anymore now. We just translate the songs.
You might have just uncovered a little method there.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, oh, this sounds right, because he was playing guitar and playing some really funky chords and stuff. So it was really interesting.
You might have caught onto a little secret there.
Yeah, but exactly.
You never know. It's true, though. It's the thing is, it's obviously in Punjabi, things can only be said in a certain way. Same as you can only say it a certain way. You translate it and you're like, what? Yeah, what are you even on about? But obviously that's what I'm trying. I think I'm working on that, but it's not necessary for my, I think I'm just exploring the songwriting in English right now, but I'm not saying no, because you just never know when you need to kind of go down that road. I tell you what I did do though, quite a few years ago, I was quite inspired by Alicia Keys. And it was her Diary of Alicia Keys album. I was trying to think what it was there. Diary of Alicia Keys. Now, if you listen to the album, she's got little interludes. She's got an intro. She's got speech. She's got her songs. She's got these little music breaks going on. I was so, so inspired by that. So at that time, that era for me, I remember mirroring that, but the Sonia Benessa way. So I did write poetry in English, which became speech over music. And I remember performing that many, many years ago at the Town Symphony Hall, I think it is, in Birmingham.
Symphony Hall.
And I did that acoustically. Amazing. It was just, I didn't realize the power of speech, poetry on words. You don't have to sing it. It was just speech. Just amazing. So that was a great experience as well. So I have tried that as well.
Wow, interesting stuff. So I'm going to move you on just slightly. So we discussed about your composing and songwriting. So I'm going to go back into your singing, because I love to learn of people. This is why. So this podcast is sort of me learning off other singers, of your so I'm going to steal your techniques and stuff and practice them at home. So that's why I like asking these questions, because I can say, I've taken that on, you know, or hopefully you might get like something a little tidbit. Oh, so Rod does this, you know, like, so that kind of thing. So when you said you were learn at the age of four, what did that entail of? Were you just sitting down with a vajar singing singing Kirtan, or
So we used to go to see the Gyaniji, as I said. So Gyaniji would give me, I'm trying to think of something as an example now. For example, the Shabad Jo Mange Thakur Apne Te, right? So, Jo Mange Thakur Apne Te, Soi Soi Deve. So, for example, that little melody, he would then give me the notation. So he would say out loud, ga 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 re re sa sa re ga re sa ni da pa 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 da sa re ga re re sa. But he'd tell me that it will fit across 8 beats in every bar, and he'd tell me how to write that down. So first, that was the initial stage. So he'd sing it, he'd then deliver it to me. You got to remember, he's blind, so it was me writing it down. Understanding what he was saying, writing it down, and then putting the words underneath the key notations. So where it was ga 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 re re sa jo mange tha, so I would actually put the spacing of the words underneath as well. I'd take that away, go home, practice with the vajra first, playing the tune. So obviously, when you're first learning, you're learning even how to present on a vajra, for example. You've got if you're right-handed like me, left hand pumping the vajra, playing the keys with my right, making sure I'm playing the tune right first. Then going back and learning the words of the actual shabad on top. He used to give like just the chorus 1 week, then the verse the following week, and then he'll say, right, now go learn the whole actual shabad, which is the full words. So by the third or fourth week, we'd have a finished shabad. That's if it was a simple shabad. However, if it was classical, he'll then tell me, right, when you've done verse one, you're now going to go into a sargam, and or you're going to start with something like a tihai, and it's like, you know, it was just the technical kind of classical side of things started to get more and more complicated. And it meant going away and learning, then saying things quite quickly, sare gare, sare gare, sare gare sa, whatever it was, saying that quickly, but singing it correctly and on time, all of that. There was a lot. And that's just a brief version of that, but you can imagine it did get quite challenging is the word.
Yeah, especially if you're at school as well and you're coming home and doing that, and it's quite demanding, because did you ever do stuff like sursadhana, like when you just meditate on notes?
No. So I didn't know that even existed as an approach to learning till, as in, I probably saw it, or as in, you see it in films, you saw it on TV that, yeah, you know, certain classical people were learning a certain way, excuse me, and but it wasn't the way I was taught. So I think, when did I have my digital Dhanpra? It was years after. So this is after all my learning, yeah, that, you know, they were like, no, you don't need a Vajra anymore. You know, you go to an instrument shop. No, you don't need a Vajra. You just need a digital Dhanpra. I'm like, what? And before you know it, I had a digital Dhanpra. And then I'm sort of sitting there going, wow, what do you do with this? Excuse me.
Right. You want some water, meanwhile? You want to get some water?
I'm going to get a Strepsil, hang on.
Yeah, no worries. I'll just pause the recording. Yeah, guys, so sorry about that. We were just for the listeners, we're both actually got colds right now. Not just me, I've got a cough and a sore throat, and Sonia's not been well for about a week or two, isn't it, Sonia?
It's been on and off, but we're determined, right?
Absolutely, yeah, we were so enthused. And I was, to be fair, I didn't want to miss the opportunity to talk to you, and because I'm already finding it insightful, just your journey in music. And we were talking about sursadhana, because I had that similar experience to you, say, well, because my latest teacher was to tell me, no, you can't, you're not allowed to use the harmonium.
Yes, I think the thing is, when you're learning with Kirtan traditionally in the Gurdwara is done with the Vajra.
Of course, yeah.
However, the original Sangeet form, from what I understand, comes from the original days of people only singing to a Dhanpra, original Dhanpra, sitar sounds and so on. So I'm talking about many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
So that traditional sursadhana, what you're talking about, is probably the most authentic way of learning Sangeet and the probably best practice, and hence why it's kind of traveled down all these centuries and so on through myths and through stories, you know, through religious stories and otherwise. You hear it through, you know, that they did a divan. A divan is like, you know, like I suppose another word is a mehfil, if I suppose, if in the more common term now, dibad or whatever, and darbar, sorry. And they have just music playing with different instruments. But back in the day, what did they do when they didn't have so many instruments? They would focus on a single sound, probably. So I feel like that is the most original way, and probably the best way, because as an artist now, looking back, had I been taught that way, I think that's a whole different way of learning. You're learning to fine-tune your own hearing to a single sound, then to find your own notes of the scale of, yep, the keys, and to make sure they're in tune by yourself. So you're brain training. So there's a lot of brain training going on, which, you know, and a lot of memory training going on for you before you even sing. I'm not saying that doesn't happen with the Vajra. With the Vajra, you've got the dependency of playing the key.
Yeah. So I was using that as a crutch.
Yeah.
Almost a Vajra. And I'm not saying it's the wrong or
thing. No, exactly.
I'm just saying it's different. Whereas, like, the more intense you get, the less accompanying instruments you have apart from the Dhanpra.
Yeah, I think now that I have, I would say I still haven't had enough experience with learning the Dhanpra way. However, I do love for Riyaz now. It's actually quite meditative. Mm. So I remember when my eldest is born, I've got a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old. When my 13-year-old was born, he was a few months old, 5 months old maybe. And at that point, I remember him getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he wants his milk, so he's had a bottle of milk, and I used to go in the side room. He used to be laid down having his milk. I'd put the Dhanpra on, and I used to do Riyaz at 5:30 in the morning. And I tell you what, time, I had no idea of time.
Wow.
I had no idea. I just knew that he drank his bottle, it was done, but he was happy and playful. carried on singing. I think I got back into that riyaz at that point really well, but with the tanpura, because it became a healing thing for me as well. And he was really, as a baby, was really playful. So it was just like, I think it kind of helped that there was music in the room. I was doing my thing. My baby's happy. I'm happy. Mm. And we're in this space of sound. And I think we underestimate the power of sound. So going back to what you're saying, obviously everyone's got their personal take on these things, but I feel like we should, as singers and artists, we should explore that if we haven't already. The vajra is amazing to learn because you're learning keys, you're learning theory. I'm not mocking that at all. I think I've learned so much. I wouldn't be who I am without that training. I still think it's restrictive because you're waiting for that sound to happen for you to sing it. So I know that for now, for example, when I'm learning a new song that maybe is already out, if I need to perform it at a wedding or something, I'll listen to it. But what am I doing? I'm still listening to the notes before kind of singing it myself. So what I do is then I go onto my piano or my vajra now, I'll play it first to make sure I've got a good understanding before I sing it. That's the way I do it now. But the tanpura, the digital tanpura that you're kind of talking about, that experience, what that does is it kind of gives you that, you just zone out. You go find where you are. You're free. You're not restricted by anything. And you allow your voice to open up, but you're also mentally opening up in that space. So I think it's really important. That Sura Sadhana practice is really important. If you want longevity, I think it's really important.
Absolutely. Were you given like palte and stuff to practice? So palte is like basically, I know you know what they are. I'm just talking to
people. Fine, no, go for it.
Just the audience, listeners. So palte basically runs. So you've got sare sare ga re ga ma and so on. So that's what, just for the listeners, that's what palte is in the technical term. Were you given those to do as well?
Yes, I was. So again, not through Kirtan training. They were kind of added in as part of the particular Shabbats that I was working on. But when I, for a short period of time, I did try and work with a couple of female teachers. This is much, 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 like I'm talking about maybe only in the last 15 years, I would say. Yeah. I must have contacted a couple of different teachers to try and get back into this practice of riyaz. And with that, they gave the alangars and the balde and so on. And it's a lot of discipline required to do that. I feel they are important. They are really, really important. It's for your muscles and your throat, your face, everything, the mouth itself, just to be able to say those words, the speech. You need to work on that for clarity, not just of the voice, but of what you're saying. So it's really, really important.
That's so insightful, Sanya, actually, because like that's one of the things I've had to relearn when you're learning classical, just the shape of your mouth when you're pronouncing a certain letter or vowel. So for example, if you're doing if you're saying you can't have your mouth bent. Just if you bend your mouth a bit, you go out of key.
Yeah, you'll get a different key. And sorry.
Okay, no worries.
Oh my goodness me.
You mean to pause again or?
Yeah, pause again. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so what we're saying was about you were describing the expression of the shape of your mouth may take you off pitch.
Yeah, so gosh, I think I paid more attention to this when I was trying to learn Bollywood songs for performances. And the reason why, you'd have things like the word ha or hai. Saying ha or ah is a classic one. Oh my goodness, right. So when we do any sort of riyaz, any sort of vocal practice, a lot of people tend to go when they're singing. So you don't realize they go eyes are, but they tend to close their mouth and it becomes so it ends up going and it goes into a sound, and we don't realize that's not correct. So if you're going for an ah, you're saying ah. So in Western singing practice, I've understood that they do the vowels deliberately.
Yes.
They'll say A-E-I-O-U because they want you to open up your mouth muscles and make sure you've got those vowels, because that's where the pronunciation of your words is coming from those vowels. If we did the literal thing in Indian form, we would be doing A-E-I-O-U and so on.
Yeah.
And that's a good practice as well, but we need to make sure we're clear on what we're saying. So ah, not a. Another thing I had a tendency, I didn't know I was doing, instead of ah, I was doing ha. So I was going, ha. And I'm like, oh no, it's not ha, it's ah. It's, you know, and then not having the nasal ending, making sure it's clear. There's so many things that can actually, with a few changes, you can really change the way what, you know, how you sound and get the clarity that you really need. But it's like you said, it's really important. The minute you close your mouth, it changes the tone, the key, the pronunciation of the word. A lot of the Indian words, Punjabi words, the minute you've got a nasal end, it changes the meaning of the actual word. So, you know, gala is not even an existing word, but gala, there is a word with the nasal ending. So you've got to make sure you're saying it right. So it's so important. It's so insightful when you really break it down, how important all of that practice really is.
I was just gonna say that's an interesting point, pronunciation, because being born here, did you struggle with the pronunciation bit?
No, because I learned Punjabi as well. Yeah, so I learned to learn Punjabi, reading, writing, speaking, I even sat the exams and everything. So yeah, I've done it properly up to A level, but not again. That was a choice. I'm really passionate about the language that I just wanted to keep. I found it amazing. It's really helped. I'm not saying you have to, but you definitely need to have a good grasp of language. So now, like when I do my performances with my Punjabi folk band. I'm not sure if you're aware, but I am a lead vocal. When we do that, for example, people who ever met me and I just come on the mic and I'm singing the real sort of, you know, Punjabi folk numbers, and then afterwards, they're like, where are you from? I'm like, I'm born here. And when I speak English, like, oh, you're really from here. Yes, I am. But it's I feel flattered. I feel really it's really heartwarming to know that the language, that I'm able to pronounce it in a way that they feel it comes from homeland, really.
And how important do you think that is, like, for anyone else who wants to sing today, to learn the language properly?
Okay, so yeah, it is important. I would say it also depends on the styles that you're working with. So if you're going traditional, learn it traditionally. If you're going with a Western approach or a pop approach, it's not terrible, but make sure you understand the language so that you're not singing it grammatically incorrect, or you're actually making sense if you're songwriting. Yeah. It's really important that you're making sense. I know that generally speaking, for many, many years, the male artists have been singing female perspective songs, and it seems to be accepted for many, many years. But now there's a lot more female artists out there. Some people are now sort of thinking, oh, okay, it makes sense when a female sings it, but it doesn't stop. It still happens. But I think it's definitely worth knowing the language that you're working. I think it helps. It's never not going to be helpful. Mm. It's like I sing in Punjabi, Hindi. I have sung in Gujarati and Swahili.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I do understand Gujarati, and I do understand very, very little, not much Swahili. But if I'm working on a song, I want to know what it means. And then I study the way it's kind of said pronunciation wise.
Yeah.
It's never going to be perfect because I'm not from those regions, or the language or the culture isn't around me firsthand, but I certainly try and adopt it.
You're very much like me in that way, sort of. I'm just constantly learning, and I always have a Punjabi dictionary on my phone. So if I'm not, if I don't know the word, what's this mean? How exactly will you pronounce this word? And you look at the Punjabi dictionary, then you can see the words of tippi on there, or a bindi on there, to be fair, I can't even remember my Punjabi alphabet, what they're called. I recognize the sounds.
Yeah.
It's been that long since I've learned Punjabi. I recognize the sounds, but
yeah.
You tell me which is a biadi, siadi. I can't remember which one's which.
but you know what the sounds are, right?
Yeah, I know what the sound is. Yeah. So that's how I.
I was just going to say, along with the Sihari Bihari comment that you just made, it's important to know the male and female difference.
Yes. That's one of the biggest things, isn't it?
Definitely is.
The problem is, in English you haven't got masculine and feminine, whereas other languages in French and Punjabi Urdu, you've got masculine and feminine terms. So
other languages, they do have masculine, feminine, but I think in English we take it for granted. We don't realize. But I remember studying French at school. So yeah, I remember the le and the la difference. And there are differences, but it's when you really go into the language that you're really learning how it's said, the singular, the plurals. It's all important.
Absolutely. Yeah. So. I'm gonna move away from slightly from singing. I can talk to you all day, Sonia. Really, it's something I'm passionate about, and I enjoy learning from you. And it's really informative to me of how you learn and the tips you do. But I want to move away because I'm conscious of time as well. So, as a woman, what barriers have you come across in the Bhangra industry? This wasn't on the list of questions. I just thought I'd drop this in.
Wow. Okay. Barriers. This is a whole. I said this literally last week on a radio show where I said this is a whole discussion in itself. A separate platform is needed just to talk about this. The barriers could be. They could be as simple as. I just don't know where to start, if I'm really honest. My head's exploding.
Okay, I'm going to prompt you. I'm going to help you. So,
yeah.
First thing you said earlier on, that there are women artists, but I don't think they're actually, in the UK, there's not many actual women artists who are prominent.
So I think you're right in terms of born and bred UK artists. I think you're right there. I think due to migration, and I'll say that, I sound like a politician now, but due to migration, we have people coming over from India and other areas of the world coming here, and then them starting a career in Punjabi, Bhangra, whatever. We've probably got more of those, but UK born bred female Punjabi singers, there's probably not many that I'm aware of either. There are Hindi singers that I'm aware of, a few. But yeah, not many that I'm aware of.
Because you remember in the early 90s when you had Network East and stuff, there were loads then.
Yeah, they were, but again, not that many.
But they're more than now, because I still remember, like, and saying that, they were like fusion. Do you remember that, was it Sangeeta?
Yeah, amazing. So yeah, Sangeeta's amazing. So she's probably the last major Punjabi artist that I would say, from a British Punjabi music industry perspective. I think that's what you're trying to get at. There have been others, but I don't think they've been promoted, or maybe not even gone down or taken the careers maybe as far as maybe myself or other artists. I don't know. It's a really tricky one. I'm going to say that when I've been going out performing, for example, there's been questions from really distant family members. I remember a real distant auntie of mine saying, "Oh gosh, how are you going to do it now that you have kids?" And I said, "Well, I'll do it. If I want to do it, I'll do it. I'll make it work." So I think personal lives can be a hindrance. There's this expectation that you have children, you stay at home. I am fortunate. I have a family full of musicians and music loving, so music appreciating, it's all in our genes. So that barrier I didn't need to overcome. It was never my parents didn't want me to do music. I haven't got that story to tell. It's my mum introduced me to music. I'm here and music lives on in our family. The barrier, I would say, from an industry side of things, in terms of trying to make it out there, it starts with things like financial backing. Back in the day, I say back in the day, when Senator's album and things like that happened, you know, people were like, oh gosh, yeah, let's get you to this label. Let's get you conversation with that label. There was money being negotiated. There was contracts being negotiated. There was money as a driving force then, where people used to get paid a lump sum for an album, lump sum for this, lump sum for that. But it was always a who you know situation. I had to know somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody to get to that somebody at the top of that record label chain. And then I went to a few kind of events where it was a networking event, things like that. I don't know why things never worked out, but I remember also auditioning for a label to become their artist. And I did the audition. They loved me. They absolutely, we shook hands. Everything was ready. And as I left their studio premises, one of their questions as I was leaving them was, we just want to quickly ask, would you be okay to kind of shoot videos wearing like short clothes, and are you okay showing flesh? And at that time, I'm not saying I am now, but at that time, my mindset was, no, I'm not okay with that. And I said, no, I don't wish to. I wish to be fully clothed or appropriately clothed. I don't want to, you know, show short anything. And they said, okay, we'll be in touch. I never heard from them ever again. So wow. That's one story. That's one story. Then I would say along the lines, further along the line, unfortunately, I have observed a lot of ego amongst the industry. It is a male-dominated industry.
Yeah.
There is a lot of ego over pride and possession of, this is my track, this is my music, this is my this is my that, I did this, I did that. There's a lot of this, or I don't speak to that person because of it. There's a lot of that going on in this industry, and it's a whole nother topic, like I said. So when you're hanging around certain people and you're part of this kind of circle and you're kind of networking, and then people are approaching that network to jump on board a certain platform, but suddenly when your partnership or friendships and things break away from that circle, unfortunately, I have seen that whole kind of connection has parted ways as well. Wow. So what I'm trying to say here, in without going into the detail, is it's a shame that the industry don't look at the talent. They look at the who are you connected to.
That's so true.
Rather than the talent.
Yeah, so true.
Okay, and I'm saying this because people like yourself, people that I'm seeing recently, speaking to recently, they say, Sonia, you're so talented. And it's great to see you're still here. You're still doing. I'm like, yeah, I'm still doing my thing. I'm still doing my thing. It's just a shame that people can't look past the egos, look past the drama, look past the once upon a time I was in touch with that person or that person or associated with that person. I am Sonia Benessa. You are Raj Kaur. You are you. I am me. I am an artist. I sing like this. I songwrite like this. Look at the talent, guys and girls, but look at the talent. Approach me for the talent, not, you know, for other, not because of stuff that happened or stuff that didn't sit right because of ego. Sadly, that is a huge barrier, because what that has meant is that you spend so much time, Raj, you understand, it takes time to build an audience, it takes time to build fan base, social media presence, actual gig presence out there, affiliates in the industry, people on your side helping you and steering you and guiding you. It takes years and years and years, and suddenly for you not to have it, it's a barrier. So that I found is something that I have experienced. Another barrier, very quickly, being a woman, is that, you know, you've got males that, sorry, Raj, but you've got males that.
No, you go for it.
Yeah, no, they, you know, they just, oh, okay, you sing. And they look at you, they're trying, okay, we'll do this for you, we'll do that for you. But it comes with an agenda, a personal agenda. I'm like, no, I just want to do my work. Like, I'm here for business.
Oh, it's quite unprofessional. That's what you say without getting.
Sadly. And it's hard to stay firm. And then you think, oh, do I need a manager? Maybe I need a manager. Or...
Well, I wish I can say I know what that's like, but I actually don't. I'm not going to be sort of saying, oh yeah, that must be, because I don't know what it's like. I've never had that experience. So
no, so there are barriers, but I think so. I would say they're just a few things I've highlighted. But it doesn't stop me, I think. So it depends on who you are as a person. It doesn't stop me. I haven't stopped singing. I'm still doing my thing because I'm dedicated to my art form in the way that I am. So I will always come back to it. And yeah, there are always people on social media. There's been times where people in the industry, oh, where are all the female artists? And we all put our hand up and, hello, we're here.
Yeah, I find that in general, not just female artists, like even in now the Bhangra industry, people say, oh, there's no singers here and stuff in the UK. Well, there are, but they're not marketable. I'm saying that in quotations for the listeners. They might not be, how can I explain this? They might not be popular. So, because basically people want popular people.
But how does one get popular? So this is a great discussion. How does one get popular? To become popular, your music has to be out there. You need to be performing out there, which requires financial backing.
Yeah, it's so, catch
22,
isn't it?
Catch 22. So you can go round and round and round on this question. My ultimate answer is finances. Once upon a time, labels used to put money behind an artist. They don't anymore. Yeah. This is why you see the rise of independent artists, and probably why we're not seeing as many female artists now born and bred from the UK taking it seriously, because you know what, it's not a joke.
Yeah.
It's not just about singing anymore. There's so much more. And Raj, I'm sure you can appreciate, there's social media. You've got to become your own PR person.
Yep.
You've got to be your own Riaz person. You've got to be your own, you got to look after your image. You've got to look after, you know, and this is all money, by the way. You know, even me turning up today, it is what it is, you know. Outfit, I'm thinking, okay, hair, makeup, whatever. For a woman, I'm not sure if you do the same, but I'm thinking all of this, you know, and that's just before I've turned up for a podcast interview. Imagine I'm going to a gig, that's a whole separate situation. Then I'm thinking, okay, I need money for musicians. Exactly. I'm charging this. Everything comes from money. So if you haven't got the financial backing, I need to find that money from somewhere myself. Yeah. And get it out there.
I mean, like, sort of my view on that recently is like, I'm happy that social media is making it change. If you put the work in social media, which we are now, that's changing, because we don't need to be dictated. You don't need to go through any bad experiences with labels again now. That's the positive side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can sort of like you can sort of create your own hype now. You can create your own PR. Because when you mention money, I was quoted, I think, for one of my first tracks, I think, was it, I'm going to be straight up here, £1,000 to get the tracks played on radio. And when I looked at their social media presence, they hardly had any followers, 140 followers. So I thought, well, why am I paying £1,000 when you haven't got that yourself?
For anyone listening, because, and I'm sure this is still correct to date, you shouldn't be paying anyone to play your music. I'm just saying that out loud.
No, it's not paying the music, but you know, for PR person.
A PR person? Okay, fine. Sorry. I thought you meant paying a radio station.
No, I don't mean that. No, I don't mean paying a radio. I mean like a PR person.
A PR company. Yeah. No, exactly. A PR company would charge. And prices vary. I'll be honest. For example, the last single, I did my own PR myself. Yeah. And I'm proud of it because, it took hard work. It's a lot of hard work. I'm not saying... it would have been nice to have a team doing that for me, but you've got, it's money. Bottom line, it's money at the end of the day. But
it shouldn't be. This is my issue. You shouldn't have gatekeepers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a gatekeeper, ultimately gatekeeper, where if you pay the gatekeeper enough money, then you got those. You remember you said about your network? That network's broken. So you've got gatekeepers who are in charge of that. Like, that shouldn't be the case where you can't get your stuff. If it's good enough, obviously we're saying if your music's good enough, that's because sometimes your music's not good enough, or it might not be to everyone's taste, which is all right. But then because you've got these gatekeepers who are stopping you from doing that, that's the annoyance for an artist as me.
It is. It really is. And it's... you just reminded me of something, and I think it's slightly off topic, but I'm just remembering as a barrier. Sorry, I've gone back one step. Another thing recently, so, and I don't know if it's just because I'm a female artist or if I'm just an artist, I don't know. But you know what? The world is a smaller place now. We're all on social media, okay? Yeah. If I wanted to reach out to you, Raj, and say, hey, Raj, I'm an independent artist, would you consider a collab? Or is there any chance we could have a chat? So the world is a smaller place, and I feel like, you know, we've got artists that have clearly written business inquiries, collab inquiries, get in touch, da 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 da. They've got it all displayed. So my pet hate right now, and I'm saying it out loud, is when I am contacting you guys, whoever you are, I'm not saying who, there's lots of people I've contacted. There's a lot of people that don't respond or acknowledge. And it's like, hello, why say collab inquiries, why say business inquiries on such and such email or a message or whatever, when you're not even going to pick that up? It's a lost opportunity, I think. I'm not saying you have to work with me, but you know what? Pick that phone up or respond and say, thanks, not interested, or not now, or whatever. Anything, just an acknowledgement would be great. That is a huge barrier overall. That is a real pet hate for me right now.
Yeah, have the courtesy, just to say, you know, thanks for your time, I actually haven't got time, or whatever reason, you know, which is fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know what, acknowledgement can go a lot further, I feel. I just think it's etiquette, but that's just my view.
I'm in your court, in your camp in that sense, like, sort of, at least have, because good manners takes you a long, long way, doesn't it? Just...
Yeah, and sadly there are artists out there who are big and they do have managers and so on, and I'm not knocking that. I'm sure it's an amazing experience to be up there. I'm not saying that, but don't forget you've come from there too, you know, and just kind of consider it. What's the harm? It takes 5 minutes of your day to look at a message or to look at some links somebody might have provided. And just give a nice response. I'm not saying I didn't. I had a couple of people that did message back and just say, you know what, this is going on for this person. Sorry, we can't take on. And you know what? Respect that person for saying so. At least I got a response.
Exactly, yeah. That's what it. Anyway, we're over an hour now, Sonia, so I'm going to...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I can carry on for 2 hours, but I'm just thinking I don't know, we're down done that.
It's all right.
So tell me about your folk band.
Yeah, so Team Sur Sangeet is it's mine and my brother's London-based Punjabi folk band with a contemporary twist. That's our kind of strap line. So it consists of me, my brother, who is Bobby Panesar, or Panesar, and my... co-vocalist Vinnie Riddhi, guitarist Danny. We are the original team. We have other musicians that come on board depending on budgets by clients and so on. But we are predominantly serving the UK and international, because we have done an international Sangeet as well, where we are doing mostly wedding Sangeet, so your pre-wedding parties, your jungle nights, and your Sangeet elements. And you know, we start with the all important traditional numbers and make sure everyone's up there raving on the dance floor, men, women, all ages, from top to bottom. So that's what we do. But we do Punjabi mehfils, we do like lori functions, birthdays and so on, but predominantly Punjabi folk.
Well, how did you get into that?
So again, sidelining everything else. As a family, because of the music family, we've seen a lot of weddings take place. Obviously, we all went as a family, you do. And my mum used to sing with the dolki a lot back in the day and, you know, sing all these traditional wedding songs. And then Kojit Bamra's mum, Mihinder Bamra, the queen of Gidda Pao Handio, yeah, the voice behind that. So she's obviously been doing it for absolutely ages. And I've seen her as a totally admire, having had the privilege of seeing her in our family singing all those traditional songs. And so, yeah, one day, I can't remember what the turning point was exactly, but I just remember being approached by a couple of musicians saying, do you know what, Son, just do some sangeets. You're really good at your Punjabi, you know, your Punjabi is really good. Mm-hmm. Just get back out there. And I think it was when my son was a couple of years old, and it was just kind of having something to do whilst I was a stay-at-home mum. And I did a couple with just the dolki and the jamcha. Yeah. And slowly, before you know it, got my brother involved. And then he named the team Sursangeet. And we turned it around, and we're now traveling up and down the country doing weddings.
So guys, listeners, if you want a Sursangeet, well, if you want a folk band for your occasion, so you know who to call, don't you?
Yeah.
So I'm just finishing off here now, just on your track Hal Virabba. How did that song come about, and what was the process behind that?
Okay, so Hal Virabba is my baby. It's my baby because out of all the songwriting I've ever done, it's the first Punjabi song I ever wrote. So I've written so many songs. Wow. It's not only the first one that I wrote, as in out of all my series of Punjabi songs, it's also the first one that got released. So I'm very kind of attached to this song. I wrote it many, many moons ago. I won't give a time and date because I probably got it wrong. But it was quite a while ago. And it was an expression of a feeling. The story behind it is a girl having like a real deep roller coaster emotional crush on this guy. And I just ended up writing this whole thing on paper. I don't remember where it came from. It just happened. Well, I do know where it came from. It came from experience, and I wrote it down on paper. And then I turned it into a song. I was playing it on the vajra, like a ghazal, actually, back in the day. I remember singing the same tune, but it was very ghazally on the vajra. And then years later or something, I just remember meeting up with the producer, Sahib G, and just gave him the song and sort of said, here, have a listen to this. And he's like, that's really good, you know, like the melody's really nice and this. And he's like, okay, let me see if I can work on it. So off he went. And he got so into it that he then came back and was like, Son, the music's done. I'm like, what do you mean the music's done? The music's done, like within a week.
Wow.
And back in the day, that's some serious progress made in a week. And that's it. And he gave it the drum and bass vibe. He's a guitarist himself. So he had a lot of the guitar sounds, electronic sounds as well. And he sourced musicians from India, got some pieces played, and then he was like, right, Son, it's time for you to lay down the vocals. I'm like, okay, we're doing this. And then before you know it, we've recorded the track, and I'm not going to lie, the track was sitting on the shelf for a little while, and then we revisited, and just over the last few years, I think I've been so attached. I was like, no, I've had a gap in my releasing of songs, and I want to come back with Hal Virabba.
Yeah.
This is personal to me. So lo and behold, last year, 2022, I spent time getting the video team, getting, you know, the creative side of things. So I thought, you know, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it a bit big. And we made it happen. So we have a video for it. And it was shot in West London. The song was kind of worked on again a little bit more, and then mixed mastered in London as well at Sahib G's studio, Cannes Studio in London. And here we go. We've got a finished song and it's out, literally.
So how did the video come about, the concept and everything else? And
yeah, so the concepts, as I said to you, I think at the beginning of the podcast, like my ideas are very organic. They come to me, but So this was a feeling I had, you know, for someone, remembering someone or feeling that kind of crush moment. And I wrote it in words. It came out in Punjabi.
Wow.
It came out in Punjabi. And I don't know the depth of the words. I think I wrote a lot more originally. Like I wrote like an A4 page of what I was feeling, but in that moment, but kind of condensed it into the song. And I applied the same rule, as I said to you earlier, you know, kind of looking out for the syllables, looking out for the pattern. But the melody was really nice for me. I just thought, gosh, it's really different. It's not your typical Punjabi melody. It's not your Bhangra. It's not all that. And I go with my gut with these things. I just think, okay, that's how I like it.
Yeah.
And I liked it. And then when Saibji heard it, he was like, I like it. So
it's very catchy. The chorus is really memorable. Like, it's in my head, like even now when we're talking.
So I said this at my radio interview last week, and I'm going to say it here as well. I totally underestimated the power of that hook line. And I've actually had the feedback has been, like some of my friends, they've called me, like, they don't even say hello. They'll just say, ha, levid. And I'm like, oh my God, is it really stuck? They're saying yes. And I've had other people from some of my audiences, my followers, and they're like, you know what, great track. We love Harlevid Abba. Like they remember the hook line. So I feel like you have to be authentic, you know, and be yourself. And I'm so glad that I left it as it was and didn't try and make it commercial, overly commercial, overly typically Bhangra or anything. It was a feeling, it was an expression, and I left it as that.
Wow, amazing.
So, yeah.
I'm going to wrap it up now. So what's in the future? What's next for Sonia?
So I'm working on so many different projects right now. excuse me. I'm working on a bunch of different tracks, different flavours, and an EP, hopefully.
Oh, wow. So what time are we looking at this EP?
I wish I could say tomorrow.
Yeah, I understand. It's a labour of love.
It's one of those things. I think I'm working differently this time around, though, Raj. I think I've done so much exploration, but I'm trying to... I've got a goal, a goal with my singing. sorry. I've got a goal which I'm trying to reach, and I think because my goal is clear now, I'm kind of making sure that I'm not missing a trick, and I'm trying to now release music heading that way.
Brilliant. So Sonia, I would say I'd actually like to carry on the podcast, but this podcast will be 4 hours Carolyn chatting to me. So I'm actually in a cut. I think we've been over an hour, maybe hour and a half, believe it or not. Time's flown. Yeah, exactly.
Tea time now. It's tea time now.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to carry on, but it's if I carry on talking to you, I'm going to be here until probably 9 o'clock in the evening because I've got so much else to talk to you. But we can do another one day.
Absolutely, anytime. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, no, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. You've really made me think about my journey. And and I've learned from you as well a new trick to look at the translation of a Punjabi song.
Yes.
I might take that away and try that.
Yeah. That has happened last week and said a week or two ago. So
I like that idea.
Yeah. Anyway, Sonia, bless you. Absolute privilege talking to you, and honestly, from the bottom of my heart, wish you the best in the future. And hopefully, I can't wait to hear your latest stuff coming out. Your new
Thank
stuff.
Thank you very much, Raj. Thank you bless very you. Much.
God bless you. Lovely talking care. To you. Thank you. And that, guys, is my podcast with Sonia Panesar. And if you can, make sure you follow it on your socials. So if this is on Instagram or on TikTok, you can see Sonia's profile on there. I'll tag it in. Make sure you give her a follow. Make sure you listen to her songs. And if you can drop us a review on whether it's podcasts, Apple Podcasts or Spotify on YouTube, drop us a comment, drop us a share. That's absolutely fantastic if you can do that for me. That's just a little thing to help us push us up the charts and get us a bit more traction. That's if you enjoy the podcast. If you don't enjoy the podcast, Rando, that's all right as well. But I'm sure you will. All right. God bless you all and thank you.